most of your Walt Disney World vacation.
The top six most rustic places at Disney World. Hi, I'm Herb Leibacher, and welcome to episode number 107 of the World of Walt podcast, Make the Most of Your Walt Disney World Vacation, for the week of February 5th, 2017. This is the podcast for Walt Disney World fans. Whether you're planning your next trip or just enjoy reliving a little bit of Disney magic. When you're on Disney property, you can be transported to many different environments. The Victorian times of Main Street, USA, a beer garden in Epcot's Germany Pavilion, or the African Safari in Kilimanjaro Safaris, just to name a few. And while everything on Disney property is relatively new, I mean, it was all wetlands before the 60s, there are a few spots that feel especially rustic and rural. So today, we're going to take a look at the six most rustic places at Disney World. To help me explore this topic, I'd like to welcome a city slicker who is just as comfortable on the back 40 as he is tracking down Experiment 626, Johnny Shortsleeve. Johnny, welcome back.
Hey, thanks, Herb. Thanks for having me back. That's a good intro. I definitely feel like I am a city slicker, which I think is hilarious that we're going to talk about rustic places. But I think I can pull this off here. I got an interesting couple of picks up my sleeve here.
So this is the Disney edition of rustic. So it's not really rustic, but it simulates rustic.
Yeah. And so I'm one of these people who loves the fact that when you walk on Disney property, you don't have the Florida mosquitoes and the bugs and all that kind of stuff that you would get if you were 100 yards outside of Disney property.
Yeah.
So to me, it's about as rustic as you're going to get from me.
It's the good rustic. It's like going camping, but glamping. It's more rustic, but Disney rustic.
Yeah. I mean, when I get out of my car to go to my house at night, I'm running serpentine, trying to not, you know, get avoided by all the bugs and the mosquitoes and, you know, covering the kids with bug spray so they don't get Zika.
or carry it off, even worse. So.
Oh, yeah, it's true.
All right, good. So I actually want to ask you what you thought about when we talked about the topic of rustic, but let's do the warm-up question first. So the warm-up question today is, what do you think is the most futuristic spot on Disney property?
Oh, wow. I love how you take these questions and they kind of flip-flop from the main topic of our discussion, because I've got myself all in the mindset of rustic, and then you threw me back over to futuristic. So, well, you know me, I don't like to go with the standard, like one that would be the safe bet for an answer like that. And I'm a car guy, so I want to say Test Track. And this is like a go with me moment for a second. Not so much the attraction itself, but I like hanging out in the little exit section of Test Track, because sometimes they're featuring some brand new cars that are coming out and trying to showcase what Chevrolet can do and try to excite you to buy a Chevrolet. As an owner of two Chevrolets, I'm definitely into that attraction. But I think to me it's neat because it kind of is giving you a sneak peek into what is really going to be the future right around the corner. Not so much, you know, from a perspective of decades ahead, but to me that's kind of neat because it seems tangible and real and I can experience it and I can sit in that car or I can talk to someone who's got the inside scoop on what's coming around the corner with some of their technology with their cars. So super boring, but to most people, but to me, that's pretty exciting.
I think that's a great answer. I always describe going on Test Track like stepping into Tron, where it really does feel like the future, where you get to do your own design. And I can hardly imagine all the technology that had to come together to make that attraction work. Plus, you get to see real vehicles at the end, so it's a lot of fun.
How funny would it be if somebody was experiencing that for the first time, that attraction as the reboot version of it, and they got off of it and talked to the head designer who came up with the concept and said, "Wow, really, you must be a real big Tron fan, aren't you?" And that designer said, "Huh? What's Tron?" like no, it is such a. It seems like it would be such an amazing nod to Tron and some of those, you know, the colors and the experiences inside of the attraction, which some people is a big turnoff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'm secretly a fan of the old version of Test Track.
I think they're both good in their own ways. You can appreciate each for what each it was. I think one was very safety focused and told that story. I think the new one is design focused and tells that story. Just different design aesthetics. Both were good.
I think that maybe that one of the drawbacks for me with the new version is I always lose on the design because I want to do the dumbest looking design that I can possibly, what ends up being the dumbest design, and ends up losing on all the performance metrics when you shoot on the board. Mm. Like everyone in the car's got their little car up there, you know, looking slick and got the cool wheels. And there's me with the hoopty that that's probably barely making, chugging along on the meter there, but yeah, always a loser. I need to figure out how to change my game and figure out how to hack the system.
I always want mine just to look as crazy as possible. So maybe we're of the same mind when it comes to car design, because I figure, yeah, okay, this could end up looking like an Impala, but you know, I want it to look like a crazy purple Impala with turbo boosters on the back, because that's fun.
You know, retro is real big right now. Like the Mustangs and the Corvette, the Camaros and the Challengers, they're all throwback designs to the 60s muscle cars.
Yeah,
I'm waiting for that to be like a throwback to the 80s. Like, I want to get like a Chevette to come back. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, maybe later. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. I mean, there's time. You know? Yeah. No rush.
You're not that old yet. It could happen. Come back around. All right. Most futuristic spot. So it was kind of a weird question, but actually for me, I think I'm going to go right next door to where you went, and I'm going to go to Mission Space, because to me, Mission Space, which takes place, I think, in 2036, if I remember right, feels realistic and attainable, but still on the horizon. So this concept of going to Mars is something that people are starting to talk about now. Some people are planning towards it, but it still feels kind of out of reach. And so to me, that feels very futuristic, where, yeah, it's something I could imagine, but it doesn't seem like we're there quite yet. So to me, that kind of defines a futuristic spot at Disney World.
Yeah, help me with this one, because that's a one and done for me. I did it one time right after it opened, and I said I couldn't do it anymore. It's just way too intense for me. Am I remembering this right, or is this my crazy imagination? Were there air sickness bags right there?
Oh, yes, there are.
That was definitely a fog when I got off of the ride, feeling like, you know, I had to crawl out, basically. You know, they had to lasso me. Take a lasso and drag me out of there. But yeah, I luckily I didn't need an air sickness bag or a sickness bag or whatever you call it. But I seem to remember something about that.
Yeah, if I remember my news correctly, I don't think that those bags were installed originally. But after a little experience, Disney decided to add them later on. And it's always interesting to me that you start that attraction seated upright, and pretty much the first thing happens is you tilt back 90 degrees. And when you do that, the only thing, aside from just sensing it in your ears, that tells you that's happening is that the air sickness bag, which sort of dangling from a like a tube, sort of moves along. And you can, that's your visual indicator that, oh yeah, I really am tilting back 90 degrees and I'm sitting on my back right now because the air sickness bag is tilted 90 degrees from what it was before. So yeah.
I'd love to be a fly on the wall for the interview process cast members. Like for the college program probably is where they'd see this, where they're interviewing this mass of people and they'd say, all right, no, this person's very personable, presents him or herself well. Definitely should put them out in front of the guests. And then you see someone like me come up to the interview, do my thing. I say, oh, this guy, put him on mop and bucket cleanup duty on Mission Space. Put him on barf patrol. That's probably where I would end up doing if they interviewed me.
I've got to imagine that's a busy job on that attraction. So you would earn your pay for sure.
Yeah, I have to have some hazard pay.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. All right, so back to rustic places. But before we talk about rustic places, when you heard the word rustic and we talked about this, what did you think when we discussed rustic?
So after I looked it up in the dictionary, really, what I did was I thought of the word and tried to think of it in terms of, you know, how do I interpret that word? And I always thought of it as simplistic. And in terms of, you know, not a lot of frills or, you know, back to basics, whether it be, you know, in design, you know, like a rustic design. Like if I, and listen, I'm sounding like I'm Mr. HGTV here. I'm not. But, you know, when I have seen rustic design elements in a house or in a building, it seems like, you know, exposed wood or reclaimed wood or, exposed wood beams or, you know, reclaimed wood and things that that weren't like overly polished or very super clean and pretty and, you know, the opposite of modern, I guess, would probably be the best way to say it. But it also kind of extends into food as well. You know, I think there's the especially when you look at like the Food and Wine Festival and some of the other special restaurants that are on property, where you look at some of the way that they prepare food, they're using like crazy techniques now that, you know, which are good, you know, with how they execute the food. But I think there's a lot to be said about a very rustic style of cooking, which is very simplistic and just roasting vegetables with oil and salt and pepper. I mean, something that doesn't require a whole lot of fancy preparation or technique. So what I did was to say, you know, if I'm going to pick three things, let me do something with respect to the resorts. I'll do another thing with respect to the restaurants, and I'll do a third thing with respect to the attractions. Something that kind of harkens back to this idea of simple, basic, but, you know, really well done and nice and pleasing in how it's executed.
Yeah, a lot of the things, same things came to my mind too. Wood was one thing that jumped to my mind right away, and unfinished as well. So I think our lists are going to complement each other. I didn't quite have the three-tier breakdown that you did, but it's sort of close. So I think this is going to be a good topic. Top six most rustic places at Disney World. So Johnny, we'll be over to you for number one.
Okay, so let's talk about the hotel experience that I wanted to go at. And I thought, you know, I don't want to steal Herb's thunder, and I know that there's probably some obvious choices and things that Herb can, you know, that you can do a whole lot better and explain than I can. So I wanted to go a little out of the park here, a little outside the box here. And I said I wanted to talk about the Treehouse Villas at Disney Saratoga Springs Resort. I don't know that a lot of people know about these. I, for some reason, and I'm surprised that they're so low on the radar. Maybe it's because, you know, the DVC people know about them and they gobble them up fast, or, you know, the people who aren't DVC members, they just pay the rack rate and get them. Maybe they, you know, don't have trouble moving those rooms or occupying those rooms, and that's why you don't hear a lot about them. But I think they're really amazing. I have a friend who stayed in one with some other friends and kind of piled in there. I think you can fit like 8 or 9 people in those things. They're pretty big, like 1,000 square feet, something along those lines. They're kind of nestled in between, is it the Lake Buena Vista Golf Course? I mean, I promise you, one of these days I'm going to do my advanced prep and I'll get all these facts straight before I start yapping on about these things. But right there by the golf course. And so it's kind of, you know, tucked in the trees. They're on these stilts. They're like 10 feet in the air. So you get this really kind of cool perch view out of the windows. They have this really nice decks, really, you know, this huge wooden decks out there and these charcoal grills. So you really do feel like you're out in the woods. But maybe this is like, you mentioned that term glamping. This is kind of like the textbook picture of what that's like. Is you're out there in the woods, you're experiencing nature, but you have these amazing amenities inside of the structure, you know, these little independent little pods, like little 8-sided buildings They're all yours. And, you know, beautiful kitchens and flooring, and you know, it's all kind of very, you know, rustic themed in terms of the woods that they chose. It's a very warm feel. There I go again, sound like an HGTV host, very warm feeling woods. So I act like I know what I'm talking about here in design. But the way that they've kind of put it all together really makes you feel like you can be at home and comfortable if you're not somebody who is an outdoorsy, woodsy, camping kind of person. So plenty of luxury in terms of what they have in the amenities, plenty of room. So if you have a larger family, or if you want to travel with some friends or some extended family and have like a little mini reunion, split the bill on one of these suckers and have some time to hang out. With the full kitchen and all that stuff. So have some groceries brought to your place, or if you rent a car, go get some groceries. So I think it's such a cool way to go if you're looking for something a little different than the traditional room at some of the other resorts, and has that great rustic feel to it.
Mm, great choice. So I've not been in one, but I have seen them before. And I think it's very interesting how they are up on stilts, just like you say, they are up in the air. So you do feel like you are up in the trees and like you are out in the wilderness, but you are in the wilderness Disney style. So there is cable TV and air conditioning and all the other amenities of home. So I think these, like you say, would be a great choice for someone who's got a big family or can split it, which it's a nice way to share the expense. But you don't hear a lot of people talking about the Treehouse Villas. I think they're a little bit off the beaten path, but that's probably part of their charm.
I really would love to, I'm going to start talking to my friends and see what they think about this. Because if I was to say what is the best kept secret in terms of the resort hotels, I'd say it's these, the Treehouse Villas. I think less people know about these or go after these or even consider these as an option for staying when they want to stay on property.
I think you're right. Yeah, I think you're right. Not a lot of people know about these. Good choice. Treehouse Villas at Disney Saratoga Springs. Okay, that was number one. Number two, I am going to go over to Fort Wilderness and a spot that I think is a lot of fun, and that is Pioneer Hall, which is home to the Hoop-Dee-Doo Musical Review. So Pioneer Hall is what I think of as rustic, with the exposed beams and lots of big dark wood, and a fun and not so takes itself seriously dinner show with a great dinner that goes with it, that's finished off with strawberry shortcake. So Pioneer Hall, I think, is what I picture when I think of the word rustic. So logs, big open ceilings, exposed wood, and it just feels like the wild frontier.
So you know how if you wanted to go to dinner at, oh gosh, I don't want to say this. This is the first thing that comes to mind, and I hope the people who are listening aren't offended by saying this, but let's say like you want to go to medieval times for a meal. You pull up to the parking lot. There's the building. Yeah, the building is kind of decorated, and with like the castle and turrets and whatever. And you go inside, and inside is that experience, that the jousting and the way it's set up with the decorations. But you got there from the parking lot. Mm. You just walked right up. This is not that way. There's a little bit of a process to get to Pioneer Hall. And, once you've gone in, you park at the main parking area, then you can, I'm not joking. I've walked from the parking lot, the main parking lot, all the way down to Pioneer Hall before.
Wow.
That's shocking considering my girth and my size, but I've done it. And, It's a great walk, but even if you ride the buses, the little shuttle buses they have on property there, you still kind of get wound up as I build up to that experience to get to Pioneer Hall. With you're amongst the trees and the campsites and the cabins and everything they have at Fort Wilderness. Fort Wilderness is just a beautiful property. I love going down there just to walk and enjoy the scenery down there and the no bug atmosphere. the food's good, the show's good. I even got to see like the holiday overlay that they did at one point, like a year or so ago. I saw it was really kind of cool how they integrated that into the show. Plus there's, you know, right outside there, there's a nice little playground for the kids. If you're there a little early, or if you've done the show and you want to let them burn off a little energy because they've been sitting down for a little while, they can go out there and play in the playground. Or, you know, if you're somebody who wants to get there via boat, it's easy to get there from the Magic Kingdom just to catch one of the little boats over there. And it's a short walk from the marina, so you don't have to go through that process of riding the buses all the way down through the Fort Wheeler's property, which is massive. It's such a huge footprint. But that is such a good choice. I like that one.
Yeah, you're right. It does feel like Pioneer Hall, and that section of Fort Wilderness really is way out there, separated from everything else when you're within a stone's throw of the Magic Kingdom, well, a small boat ride anyway, but you feel like you are out in the wilderness. And actually, this could probably be a twofer. So Pioneer Hall is the home of the Hoop-De-Doo Musical Review, but right next door is Trail's End, which is a buffet restaurant, which I think is another hidden gem and something that a lot of folks don't know about. It also has a very rustic feel to it. So I think Pioneer Hall, Trails End, this area of Fort Wilderness, just screams rustic.
Yeah, and it's rustic as you want to be. And if you're somebody like me, I've stayed in the cabins before, and the cabins are like the Trias Villas, like a junior version of the Trias Villas. Yeah. I think they might sleep like five people or something like that. But so it's, you know, a little kitchen and nice little living room area. Really well done. Really nice. Really, really nice. And very surprisingly affordable for what you get there. And so you have that on one end of the spectrum. So if you're someone like me who isn't super outdoorsy, or you could bring your RV there, bring your camper, there's that little section where you can pitch your tents too. Sure. So it's amazing now that there is a huge variety of experiences that you can have at Fort Wilderness.
Yeah. Yep. You're right. I think if I remember right, one time when I was a kid, I went on and I didn't live near Orlando, but I was in Florida. We had a Cub Scouts or something where we did a trip and did the tent camping at Fort Wilderness. It's like, yeah, that's rustic right there. That's a rustic that only a kid can handle, sleeping on the ground.
Yeah. You have to worry about the really crazy critters, coming upon your campsite. They're all kind of under control over there.
Yeah. Yeah. That was number two, Pioneer Hall. Number three, Johnny, we're back over to you.
Okay, so I did a review, or I picked a resort hotel to start off with the list. Now we're going to the restaurants. My choice for a rustic restaurant experience or dining experience was, the first thing that came to mind was Tutto Italia in Epcot, in the Italy Pavilion. It's one of these little gems that I think a lot of people blow right past on their way to Via Napoli and don't really realize it's there, or if they're not going to be in Napoli, if they just kind of walk to the Italy Pavilion, they don't really go too deep into the pavilion. They might stop at the little fountain and then move on and not see it, because the sign is really small, surprisingly small. And maybe that's part of the that was intentional, is to kind of give it that the vibe that it's like this little neighborhood joint or this little alleyway joint that you would probably find in Italy. That isn't screaming out for tourists to come through. But I like it because, well, the food's good, wine's good, but it has a really neat rustic feel in there in terms of the decor that they have. So, you know, depending on the room you're in or a section of the little of the area, there's like a fireplace room that has this really cool, like the brick on the ceiling kind of set up, and these cool stone patterns on the walls. There's these huge wooden tables that they have in there that you can kind of just, if there's, only a couple people sitting in one, you just kind of join in on there. They also have these nice little kind of tucked away sections where, like, little couches there, so you can have a quiet conversation, a couple of little corners in there. But the other thing I think is really interesting is the menu. There's definitely a handful of things on the menu that might be a little exotic for people who don't eat a lot of Italian food. But there are some pretty straightforward things that you've heard of in terms of the cheeses or the meats and things like that, or even some of the warm dishes like the paninis that they have. Now, the interesting thing, too, is the wine. I think the wine choices are really interesting because they're very accessible outside of Disney in terms of the things that they're offering. So if you have something on there like a Prosecco, some of the, you know, I think most of all the Proseccos you could probably easily find in your hometown. They're not super rare or crazy or, small vineyard sourced kind of things, which I'm okay with that. I think it's nice to be able to experience something and say, you know, I really enjoyed this glass of red wine that I had or this Pinot Grigio. I want to get that at home too. It shouldn't be that hard to do. So I think it's a nice way. And all this stuff is by the glass, or most of it's by the glass. So it's very easy to go in there and try something you haven't experienced before. Whereas, you know, if you're looking at something instead that is a small vineyard or is a higher priced product, where if you see in a restaurant, it's only by the bottle, that's kind of hard to do because you're making a big investment and you're kind of hoping that it's good. So this is a nice way to kind of introduce yourself to things you haven't done before in a really cool, rustic environment.
Wow. I like how you did that. So it is interesting how you get to try a lot of different things there, though. I think the wine by the glass is a great idea. Just as you say, you don't have to make this huge investment and go way off the beaten path. And I guess you would call this Italian rustic. It sort of has a bit of an unfinished feel, or maybe a rougher feel, but an Italian twist to it. And yeah, I don't know, maybe even a little taste of modern in there. I don't know how you would describe it all. Maybe your HGTV hat can help with that. But yeah. I do think the interior is very interesting.
Well, and then, you know, with respect to the food too, I mean, going back to, you know, how I'd think of rustic in terms of simplistic design or simplistic preparation, I think that's easily said about the food. It's not, you know, there are some pasta dishes I think that you can do that. And you can even order off of the menu at Tutta Italia, if I recall, and have it brought over to you. But, you know, if you went there and say, I just want a selection of some cured meats and some cheeses, and they'll give you some bread. And, you know, it's a very simple meal that you can have, or a small, you know, small plate kind of thing. So that also kind of plays into why I think that really does capture that rustic feeling.
Mm-hmm. Ah, good choice. Tutto Gusto. All right. That was number three. Number four to me. So I will don my cape of Captain Obvious and go to a place which had to be on the list. And thank you for leaving it for me. I'm going to go over to Disney's Wilderness Lodge. So you think about the Pacific Northwest, and you think forests, and you think soaring lobbies and timbers holding up the joint. And that's what Disney's Wilderness Lodge is all about. It really does feel like a different time and a different place, even though you are in the middle of everything that Walt Disney World has to offer. It's got great dining options. It's got a big fireplace. Even if it's 90 degrees outside, it will be comfortable, and the fireplace will be running in a way that you can enjoy it. There are plenty of rocking chairs to sit back and relax. So I think Disney's Wilderness Lodge is rustic, done Disney style, where it brings in the best of the Pacific Northwest in a way that's very accessible and very comfortable.
You know, one thing about it that I don't think a lot of people know about, and I hope I'm not spilling any crazy secret, but they have tours that they give every day that you can do for free. And you'll have, it seems like it's always the same guy. I don't know, maybe there's a few cast members who do it, but every time I go over to that resort and just kind of hang out, or if I'm there to eat or meet friends, whatever, and I see the tour going on, it's usually the same person. Mm. But anyway, so it's a neat tour because the cast member will walk you through really key design elements of the resort that play into why this is such a special place and what they've done very deliberately to recreate those, you know, those majestic lodges in their heyday, and also kind of pay homage to, you know, that corner of the world as well. And you know, there's the section of the great, you know, that hall. I'll do my homework one of these days, Herb. I'm so sorry. I don't know the name of this, because the equivalent of the great ceremonial house, yeah. the main entryway. How they have the different layers of the earth in terms of how they represent it with the colors and the textures, in terms of, like, you know, how you would see, like, if you were in the canyon. And I think it's just it's such a cool vibe there, especially at Christmas time. Like, the way they decorate it and holidays is just beautiful. I would argue that it's probably my number one favorite resort hotel on property during Christmas, in terms of the decorations and the music that they play. And the food's amazing. Artist Point is one of my favorite restaurants. I love what they do there. And I think the wine program there is awesome, in terms of incorporating the Pacific Northwest wines with the foods they prepare. They have a new chef, or new-ish chef. So if Artist Point's something you did a few years back, you're going to see some new stuff there. It's definitely worth trying again. And then there's always, you know, the favorite of so many people, Whispering Canyon. The Whispering Canyon Cafe is just a hoot to eat at. The food's amazing. I'd argue some of the best barbecue on property right there for dinner at Whispering Canyon.
Yeah, Whispering Canyon's a lot of fun. It's a good place with a lot of energy. Kids are having a good time in a controlled way. Be sure to ask for ketchup, of course.
Or straws.
Yes, that's right. I remember I had one opportunity to stay at Wilderness Lodge, and I think I had a really early checkout, and I remember being outside in the portico, or whatever you call that thing where you pull up the car to load and unload. And I remember talking to one of the cast members, and he said, "Do you hear that?" And I said, "Hear what?" And he said, "Crickets. Do you hear the crickets?" And I actually could hear the crickets. You can hear the sound of, you know, 1,000 crickets as they do their thing in the morning, or earlier morning or overnight. And he said, "You know, that's piped in. There are no crickets around here, but wow. Disney adds the sound of crickets to make you feel like you're in that environment." And I always remembered that. I don't know if they still do that, and I don't think I'm making this up. I think that's a real story. But I always thought that was very cool, that even the sounds in the nature sounds in the background are very carefully chosen to add to the overall rustic experience.
Either they really do it, or they had like a bet going, say, "Hey, look at this guy. I bet you I'm getting to believe the cricket story." And I said, no, you can't. Dollar.
Somebody won a buck off of me, no doubt, that day.
That's awesome. I'll have to go check that out now. Did they say if it's just in the morning or in the evening that they do that, or is it all day?
So I remember I was there. It was very early morning, like daybreak kind of deal. Yeah. So I don't know if it happens, if it still happens, because it was quite a few years ago. When it happens, but this is a story I have in my mind, and I'm kind of going with it as reality.
Yeah, it's funny how there's all these little things in there that you and I think we kind of consider ourselves well-traveled in the parks, but we always are finding little things like that that have been hidden, that, and, you know, hidden in plain sight, that we don't realize is there, are there. And that's so cool. Like, somebody told me at the Haunted Mansion that if you are in the stretching room, and if you're there long enough, you'll hear the ghost host say, "Get out."
Yes.
And so they told me, I said, "Let me go check that out." So I'm there by myself, and the crowd leaves of guests, and I'm standing there waiting, and the Haunted Mansion, the cast member at that point, walks over to me and puts his hand out, like, to direct me to leave the stretching room. And I said, no, I'm waiting for the voice to say, "Get out." So then he kind of leans in and looks at me and goes, "Get out." I said, "No, not you. Like, I want to hear the ghost host say that." And so I was like, "I blew it. I got to go try that again."
Yeah, I've heard that too. And if there's a big crowd and they sort of shuffle out slowly, I've heard some of the audio there, but I don't think I've heard at the very end where it says "get out." So yeah, that's fun.
Yeah, that's so neat. I'm going to check out the crickets next time I'm over there.
Yeah. If I'm just making up the story in my head, then I think we should just propagate it as a fun rumor. So, I think it's
this
true.
This is where it started.
Yeah, that's right. Okay, so number five, back to you, Johnny.
All right, so we did. I did a resort. I did a restaurant. I'm going to round off my list with an attraction, and I think this is kind of an easy attraction to classify as being rustic, but I like it for a number of different reasons. And it's the Country Bear Jamboree in the Magic Kingdom in Frontierland. Now, when we talked earlier, I was thinking about the term rustic as being very simple, and also kind of harkening back to, you know, maybe the country or something that's very rural almost. I think that hits that in terms of, you know, the country. It's in the name. In terms of the music and the soundtrack and the story that's being told in the show. But I think you can also talk about in terms of the decor, and, you know, especially like when you go into the little waiting area where they have like two benches and a whole bunch of open area for people to stand and wait for the next show. And in terms of like the wood flooring, you can see like the little bear claw marks on the floor itself and the floorboards.
Yep.
But, you know, above and beyond that, I think it goes back to that simplistic aspect of rustic in my mind in terms of the attraction in the show itself. I mean, it's very simplistic in terms of how they deliver the story and how they get you involved in what they're trying to do there with presenting their little review. But that's not a bad thing, because I think simple sometimes is really, really good. I mean, yes, I love some of the crazy, amazing technology that they're putting into the parks now. I think it's just really fascinating to me. But I also do appreciate something that's very simple and done very well. And I think that the show is done so well. And, you know, some people can maybe argue, all right, well, we need to maybe fix the audio a little bit, or, you know, the audio levels, or certain things can be sharpened. You know what? I don't get fussy about that kind of stuff. I can see past that and say, I know, I see what they're trying to do here, and it's really cool. And it hits on so many really good levels in terms of how they've executed that attraction. And, you know, it's one of those ones where, yeah, if you go side by side and compare it to something that's newfangled, you know, like Frozen Ever After. Yeah, I see there's an amazing technology that's built into Frozen Ever After. But here, though, I don't need that. I think the story is amazing, and the characters are fun, and it's something that I love to see over and over again and won't get tired of.
I agree. It's one of those things where people walk by it every day, and you want to say, hey, do you know you're missing something? You're missing something that's fun, that's classic, that normally doesn't have a long wait, and something that people, I think, genuinely enjoy if they give it a chance. I believe that sometimes people say, oh, Country Bear, well, I'm not really into country stuff, so I'm not going to like that. But you don't have to be a fan of a particular type of country music to enjoy the Country Bear Jamboree. Yeah, that's sort of the style of music, but that's not really what this is all about. It's about a show with the bears. The bears have personality. The bears perform. And it's just a lot of fun. So it's one of those things that I wish more people could take advantage of, it because it's classic and it's Disney, and it's a great example of rustic in a Disney way.
And a little warning in case anyone is listening who hasn't experienced this ride, be careful, this attraction, be careful visiting this attraction if it's right before lunchtime or right before dinner time, because as soon as you dump out of that theater, you're right there and just catch a big whiff of Pecos Bill in the Tall Tale Inn Cafe. If you're hungry when you walk out of there, you're gonna want to make a stop, and I'm sure that's done by design, but it sure smells good when you're walking out of there.
Yeah, it does, and I have come to appreciate the new menu there. So switched around, it's now what I call the Disney edition of Chipotle, but I like it. I think they've done a good job.
And it keeps changing. They keep tweaking the menu a little bit. So if you've tried it, you know, 6 months ago, you come back today, you know, it'll look, there's a few little differences on there.
Yeah. Yep. It's a good spot to take in.
Yeah.
Okay, Country Bear Jamboree. It's a good one. That was number five. So number six, last one, is over to me. So I'm going to stay right there at the Country Bear Jamboree and maybe just open the lens a little bit and talk about Frontierland as a whole. So when I think of the word rustic, this is definitely one of the things that came to top of mind. And again, thanks for letting me pick the obvious choice. I think about the wooden clad buildings. I think about the wood sidewalks. I think about the lanterns. And for some reason, for me, Frontierland really comes alive at night. So the lighting from the lanterns just has a very rustic feel to me. It's a place I really enjoy seeing in a different light at night, if that makes any sense at all. So Frontierland as a whole is one of the things that I think about when I think of rustic.
I'm glad you mentioned that, the concept of experiencing it. You know, you see it one way a day in the sunlight, and then a totally different way once the sun is set in terms of the lighting, because it really is totally different, a totally different experience there. And I love just hanging out and just catching a seat and relaxing. I mean, I know that's a great spot to watch the parades from. I don't tend to do that a whole lot anymore, but if you're just looking for a spot to cool your heels, use good Frontierland lingo there.
There you go.
Cool your heels a little bit. That's a good spot to do it, just because it's fun. It's a little more relaxing because it is a corner, like one of the corner spots of the property. So you're not like Main Street's a hard spot. Main Street USA is a hard spot to sit and relax because there's just so many people coming and going. Fantasyland's a hard spot because there's just so many people wanting to just go through all of those attractions. But I know, yeah, Big Thunder Mountain's popular, Splash Mountain's popular, but still, it feels like to me it is a little bit more relaxing to hang out there than some of the other spots in the Magic Kingdom. Mm-hmm. And then they have, you know, every now and then you see some roving entertainers come through there. The little three-piece band that comes through there with their, you know, the banjo and the tuba. Those guys are fun to watch. So, and that's the home of the turkey leg. Are you a turkey leg fan?
You know, every once in a while, I'm not a raving fan just because there's so much meat, and I'm a meat guy, but they kind of do me in with one turkey leg. So every once in a while, I will enjoy one, but I'm not an all the time turkey leg guy.
I just like the aroma of smoked meat. I think it's like aromatherapy. Mm. Like, you know, if I was getting a spa treatment, they said, do you want lavender? Do you want lilac or rose? Like, no, give me brisket. Like, give me some smoked meat like that. Like, maybe what I should do is, you know how some people keep essential oils like on their desk, you know, in case they need to focus or calm down? I'm going to keep like a little vial of liquid smoke right next to my, just, which basically smells like barbecue. That might be the way to my own personal zen.
Because a little bottle of actual brisket probably wouldn't smell very good after a few days. So.
Yeah, once it becomes rancid.
Yeah.
Yeah, all
overly
bets are
rustic,
off.
Yeah.
I'll start hallucinating after I take a few whiffs of it.
Oh, good. So this was a good list. Actually, we covered a lot of territory when it came to rustic. I think some different angles on rustic, some different places where you can get rustic. So that was fun. Top six.
I think it. I'm sorry to interrupt you. I think it really does a good job of illustrating just the overall experience and design of the parks and the resorts and the restaurants. It's amazing how varied of an experience you can find. Mm-hmm. It's not just Fantasyland and pixie dust kind of stuff. There's a little bit of something for everybody everywhere you go and something new to explore.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think there really is something for everyone, and for folks who enjoy rustic, this is your list. Top six most rustic places at Disney World. So number one was the Treehouse Villas. Number two, Pioneer Hall, home of the Hoopty Doo Musical Review. Number three was the Tutto Gusto Wine Bar. Four, Disney's Wilderness Lodge. Five, the Country Bear Jamboree. Please check it out, folks. You will like it. And number six, Frontierland. So, Johnny, it was a fun list.
Yeah, man. Thanks for letting me talk to you about this one. It's always fun talking with you, Herb. I love the topics you come up with because it's new and different and fresh, not the same old stuff that I'm hearing on the other podcasts. So I like what you're doing here.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate your saying that. So if people are interested in what you're up to or things that you want to plug, can you fill us in?
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. I feel bad always plugging myself and all my stuff. So let me take 30 seconds here to pitch something I think is really cool. You know, everyone's hanging out on Facebook these days, right? So that's like the new hangout where everyone can be found. How about this? Next time you're on Facebook, hit that little search bar up there, and I want you to check out something called Nathaniel's Hope. It's Nathaniel, like the name Nathaniel, Nathaniel's Hope. It's a cool organization that's doing a lot of work here in Central Florida. A little bit of a sad story in terms of how it got started with the family, and they're doing all this effort in memory of their son, and just absolutely amazing stuff. I learned about it because I've got a couple of friends who are pretty active with them and doing some of the events they do here locally. You know, if you're a local here in Orlando, check them out and see if you can participate and volunteer. They have some really cool little fairs that they do. If you're not a local, just check out the site anyway on Facebook, because I think there's a lot of good that can come from just seeing what they're up to, and maybe you'll get some inspiration on something that you can do, or turn someone else on to their page and see if they can get some inspiration from it. So I think there's a lot of good that can come from just immersing yourself in an environment where people are doing some really amazing things that impact the community in such a positive way. So Nathaniel's Hope, check that out.
Very good. I will check it out when we're done. All right, Johnny, thank you very much for spending some time with me. As always, it was fun.
Yeah, thanks, Herb. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Today we head out to the Frontierland Music Loop, and yes, we have made it through the list of the top six most rustic places at Disney World, but our conversation doesn't have to end here. I'd like to hear what you think. You can add to the list by visiting the show notes page at worldofwalt.com/107, a page that works nicely on your smartphone, tablet, or desktop. I'd like to thank everyone who's been in touch and invite you to get in touch with me by following me on social media, facebook.com/worldofwalt, or pinterest.com/worldofwalt. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I would appreciate it if you would spread the word. Tell your family and your friends about it. And as always, to wrap up, I would like to give you a big thank you for spending some of your time with me today. I'd also like to thank everyone who visits the worldofwalt.com site, where you can read interesting Disney articles and chat with other folks in the comments sections. By listening here and by visiting the site, you allow me to share the fun of Disney with you. And that is very, very cool. Thank you for being a part of it. So until next time, my friend, may God bless you.
So there's a great big beautiful tomorrow, shining at the end of every day. There's a great big beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.